All right. So what happens next in the system?
At the end of the summer of 1968, Pete Brynjolfsson decided to leave the band and join the Army. So we replaced Pete with a new lead singer named Dennis Tehan.
Who's in the lineup now at this point?
Michael Holm on keyboards, guitar, and flute and vocals. Myself, Dick Erickson on bass and vocals. David Rivel on lead guitar, Gary Nelson on drums, and Dennis Tehan on lead vocals.
Did you play the State Fair, the teen fair at the State Fair, Minnesota?
Yes, we played there pretty much every year during the existence of the band. We played and fronted a number of national acts.
Okay, Mike, do you recall some of the bands at the teen fair you played with?
A lot of the local bands.
With local bands, I remember CA Quintet we played with there.
Yeah, let's see. High Spirits.
Do you recall playing with any national bands at the State Fair?
Yes, we played right before Sugarloaf went on. Mm-hmm. And also with before the James Gang and Sha Na Na. Those are the main ones I remember from the State Fair.
Mm-hmm. And Bruce Brantzig is the booking agent, correct, at this time?
Correct.
And does he develop into a manager as well?
Well, he developed into a really more of a management situation with the South 40, then ended up becoming Crow. And, of course, Bruce booked them as well as the System. And at that time, Bruce was really close with South 40, really liked them a lot, and he was trying to do whatever he could do to kind of further their career along, and then got into more of a management position with them. As he started making connections and developing the career for South 40, he noted that there were opportunities for the System along there, and he had met James Golden, that was the producer for the Crying Shames, and Bruce always kind of likened us a little bit to the Crying Shames because of our vocals and some of the musical styles, and we did Crying Shames music in the System, and he thought Jim Golden would be a great connection for the System. So he had been doing some things with Crow with Jim Golden, his company, and brought Jim Golden up to Minneapolis to record the System.
Okay, and side A is Catherine. Mike, what's the story behind that song, and who's playing on that song on the record?
Well, that song came together really, really quickly. I think I wrote the song in like about 10 minutes. It's just one of those strange things where it just, boom, there it is. And players on that are myself on keyboards and vocal, and Dick Erickson on bass, Dave Rivel on guitar, Gary Nelson on the drums, and Denny Tehan sharing the lead vocals with me.
Okay, and the other side, One in a Million. Dick, what's the story on that song?
It was a song that Dave started and had pretty good shape by the time I got involved with him on it. However, it had a kind of a country, I perceived it as having more of a country feel to it in a lot of respects, or at least having that being a part of the element, a main element of the song. So Dave hadn't had a lot of experience in the country music, and I had dabbled in it more and was interested in it. So he and I kind of teamed up and finished the song. I think I worked on the bridge with him and then worked on some ideas for the guitar solo.
And just for the record, who's playing what on One in a Million?
Michael Holm, of course, on keyboards. Myself, Dick Erickson on bass and vocals. David Rivel on lead guitar and lead vocals. Gary Nelson on drums. And Denny Tehan on vocals.
And that was at Universal Audio. Do you recall the engineer?
Bob Schultz, who recorded for pretty much everyone.
Do you recall the equipment, 4-track or 8-track? Or
I believe they were at 8-track at that point, if I remember correctly.
Were you doing overdubs?
The only thing I remember overdubbing was the guitar solo, if I remember correctly.
Okay, and that comes out on the Vineyard label. Whose label was that?
Dick tells me that was our label, and some of us were, what would you call it, wine aficionados?
Oh, yes.
And we decided to call it Vineyard label.
That's another thing we did when we were in Chicago. We picked up wine we couldn't find in Twin Cities.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the record comes out, and what happens next?
Mr. Denny Simons, also known as Jason F. Kennedy, becomes our manager and booker as Bruce Brancig moved on and started exclusively managing Crow. And so Denny Simmons said, "Hey, I know all these record, or rather radio stations." And he had this concept of putting this promotional effort together to go around to all the different radio stations in person and hand them music director the 45. And he came up with this idea for this poster. And I still want to go through Mike's archives here and find that poster. But it was really something. It was a woman that Denny knew up in Superior, Wisconsin, who was extremely overweight, and somehow he talked her into taking her clothes off and covering her with about 300-400 of our 45s. Took a photo of her, and that was Catherine, I guess. But I'll tell you what, when they walked into the radio station with our 45 and then handed them that poster went up on the wall, and it didn't hurt.
Okay. Denny and Gary were doing the promotion primarily?
Denny and Gary Nelson, they jumped in Denny's car and did a road trip for a week. The band actually took a week off while they went and did that.
So what happens with the record? Did you get any airplay anywhere?
We ended up getting airplay in, there might be some more places other than what I've recalled here. But Wilmer and St. Cloud, I know for sure, played the record. The record went to number 10 up in Duluth and on the Iron Range, and that's what got us the gig with Bobby Sherman at the Duluth Auditorium there. And also got us gigs with the Box Tops in Sioux Falls because we had airplay there, and got airplay in Fargo, and it became number one in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. So we had to go back up there in the middle of the winter and do a big concert through the snowstorm and fight the ice.
Mike, what do you recall about Devil's Lake?
Not much.
I remember it being really different. Really different. The vibe was really strange. It was, you know, just people that lived out in the middle of nowhere, especially back then. I mean, we're all more well connected now. Things almost feel like if it doesn't matter where you live, we all kind of have the same experience through the way we're all connected with the media and the internet and everything. But back then, it was like they were there, and that was their world. And I remember us going to a party afterwards, and people were pretty nice and stuff, but it was very strange. I don't know how else to describe it.
So I know that the band The System had a song on the Gathering at the Depot album called Smile and Eyes. What is the story on that song?
Well, Mike wrote the song, another one of Mike's originals in his catalog of original music. After recording Catherine, we wanted to, you know, do a follow-up, and we went into the studio into the new Sound 80, which at that time was located in Edina, in this kind of a smaller studio than, of course, what they ended up in eventually in South Minneapolis. But it was in Edina, kind of in a warehouse area. Very nice, pretty much state-of-the-art studio for its time. So we went in there and recorded there. I don't recall us releasing the song or doing much with it right away. I can't recall what the reason for that was. Mm-hmm. But what ended up happening was about a year after we recorded it, we got contacted by Ralph Ortez from Alpha Productions, who wanted to have us consider starting an exclusive booking relationship with him. And he, you know, offered us a really good deal, you know, like taking no commissions and some of the engagements that we've had for a number of years and established relationships on, and a pretty good deal on a percentage on other engagements. And then he also said, well, I really want you guys on my Gathering at the Depot album. He said, I'm doing this big, big thing. And he says, but... I said, well, didn't you already record that? And he said, well, yeah, but he says, I want you guys on it. He says, have you got any songs I could maybe put on there? And then we had Smile and Eyes in the can, so to speak. Mm-hmm. He liked it and put it on. So I guess we were the only band that didn't perform live at the Depot, but were on the Live at the Depot album.
So, Mike, were hand claps and applause added then to your studio song of Smile and Eyes?
That's correct.
And who's playing what on Smile and Eyes?
I'm sharing the lead vocals with Danny Tian, and I'm playing keyboards, and Dick Erickson on bass, Dave Rivell on guitar, and Gary Nelson on drums.
Do you recall who the engineer was at Sound 80?
I'm not sure, but I think it may have been Herb Pilhofer.
Oh, okay. Were there horns on that song?
Yes.
Who's playing the horns?
A horn section from Chicago. Not the band Chicago. The horns were added on after we recorded it. So it was just hired horn guys from... somebody Bruce Brancic knew in Chicago.
They came up here to...
No. They took the tape down to Chicago and put the horns on it.
Oh, the horns were added in Chicago.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's right, isn't it?
I think that's correct, yeah.
Okay.
Was that Bruce's idea to do the horns?
Or... yeah.
Okay.
And whoever produced it, whoever was in the studio with us that day...
was James Golden involved with that also?
It could have been him.
It's possible he was still involved at that time, yeah.
Okay, so the song didn't come out until a year, till the end of 1970.
Correct.
Did the band do any other recording?
Yes. We did a few over the years. In the early days... the last recording was Smiling Eyes, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe that's true.
But in the early days, we did Beautiful Day, Traveling Businessman, all the songs that I had written. Not all the songs, but I wrote all the songs that we recorded.
They got to be on tape somewhere.
That... acetate you have there says it is a Dove acetate, so I assume you recorded a Dove as well?
Yeah, we did in the early days. Mm-hmm. We did a song called He's in Love with Himself, and that was with when Jim Richards was in the band, very, very early. And I Just Don't Know.
Who's the writer on those two songs?
I wrote I Just Don't Know. Michael wrote I Just Don't Know, and Dave Rivell wrote He's in Love with Himself.
Okay, so that was strictly an acetate. This,
right.
There was never a record pressed of that. Okay, so your record comes out, and you have some airplay around town. Were you able to get any airplay in the Twin Cities area?
Well, I think the Gathering at the Depot album... got some local airplay. Catherine won in a million. If it got local airplay, it was sparse at best, I would say. I don't know if we have really had that much local airplay on that one.
What do you recall about playing with Bobby Sherman in Duluth?
Lots of screaming girls. And we got to take home all the stuff that the girls threw up on stage for Bobby Sherman. So, you know, it was candy, flowers. I want, what else was up there?
Presents.
Oh, yeah, presents.
Love notes. Love letters.
Yeah, we got some booty out of the deal. I mean, you mean as far as, I mean, not that kind, but, you know.
Cookies, cakes. Little girls would bring just all this different stuff to give to Bobby Sherman.
Yeah, yeah, it was quite a scene. It was a fun event, and system was received extremely well, and it was a fun experience.
Bobby said we were the best band that he's worked with, because really? Bobby would hire a band wherever he went. He didn't travel with his own group.
I forgot. We backed him up.
Yeah, we backed him up. We learned his songs.
Oh. I forgot that, yeah.
Songs like, "Hey, Little Woman, Please Make Up Your Mind," and the hits.
Right.
So we learned them before the show. He would come on, and we didn't even go through a tune before for a sound check or anything. He'd just come on.
You mean you never practiced with Bobby Sherman?
No. Nope.
Never.
But you saw him when he walked on stage, and we had the set list in the order that the songs were supposed to be performed, and boom, we'd go into them.
Well, that's a nice compliment to get from Bobby Sherman.
Yeah, you know, that's awfully strange, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the way it was.
And that's the way it was, though.
The beginning of every song and the end of every song, the little girls were screaming so hard, even if somebody would have muffed up really bad, you couldn't even hear it. But we didn't. We had the stuff down.
Yeah, we had it down.
We had it down. Yeah. Yeah.
What happens next with the system?
Gary Nelson decides to leave the band to get married, and then he joins the Army. We were looking around for drummers and knew that Stillroven had broken up, and I knew a couple of the guys in the Stillroven and always had liked that band a lot, and heard Phil Birdall was available, and so gave Phil a call, and he was happy to join the band. It was a good relationship.
I understand the band played with Three Dog Night at the Met Sports Center in Bloomington.
Yes, that was not too long after that summer. Before that, we had just started our relationship with Central Booking Agency, and at that time, Central was starting to work with a company out of LA that was producing national concerts all over the country. One of the things that they wanted to do with us was have us, you know, be a front act for some national concerts, and we said, well, that sounds great. And then this was a good one. This was a big one. This is right at the height of Three Dog Night's popularity, I would say, or one of the high points. So we played to a packed house at Met Sports Center. I know there was at least 14,000 to 15,000 people there, and we had a great night. The band played really well, went great. When we got done with the concert, the guys from Three Dog Night and their management people said, "Say, what are you guys doing tomorrow night?" And we said, "We've got tomorrow night off. You want to front us in Kansas City?" So we said, "Yes." So we said, what do we got to do? Well, here's the deal. We got a sound check at 3:00, so tomorrow afternoon. So we all ran home, picked up some clothes that we needed, and hit the road, followed Three Dog Night's semi all the way down to Kansas City, arrived at 11 in the morning. We drove through a terrible snowstorm, just followed the lights in their semi, checked into a Holiday Inn, slept for a couple hours, and then got up and hit it.
Were you the only other band on the bill with Three Dog Night at the center?
Yeah, at both those concerts, correct?
No, I think the Litter was at the first one.
Really?
Yeah, because I remember Zippy was pissed off because they didn't get invited to go to Kansas City.
Oh.
That they asked us instead of the litter.
Really?
To front form in Kansas City, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
There we
go. In Kansas City, it was just the system and three dog.
Okay.
Okay. Any other national bands you recall playing with in the 1970 time period?
Yes. Steppenwolf,
mm-hmm.
The Box Tops, American Breed, the Turtles, Sugarloaf, we may have mentioned before, Tommy James and the Shondells.
Mm-hmm.
To name a few.
To name a few. I think there were. Neil Young's Crazy Horse Band we played with at the Surf Ballroom in Clear Lake.
What's the next chapter in the story of the system?
Well, Mike and I were trying to follow some of the musical trends that were going on in the direction that we thought the band should take. And Denny and Dave weren't quite fitting into that. And so after some heartfelt discussions about all that, Denny and Dave left the band. And Mike went from being the exclusive keyboard player to being the lead vocalist, front lead vocalist for the system. Then we added Vic Campbell as a new keyboard player. And then I started sharing lead guitar and bass duties with Tom Poling, who was formerly of the CA Quintet, with Tom primarily being the lead guitar player.
So you would go back and forth between bass and guitar?
Yep.
And with that change in the personnel, Mike, was there a different sound to the system at this point now?
Oh, most definitely. Mm-hmm. Vic Campbell had a completely different keyboard style than I did. Yeah, he was a better keyboard player as well. And he sang great. He was a big contribution. Tom Poling had a completely different style than Dave Rivel.
Dave was very precise about whatever he would play, and he was he liked to think out his parts and perform them pretty much the same all the time, whereas Tom Poling was completely loose. And that was one of the things that was really kind of interesting about Tom when we saw him with the CA Quintet, was that he had this style and he would just seem so relaxed and it's like, let's go. And he would just play and it would be kind of different every time you'd hear him play the same thing. And we thought, wow, that would add a nice dimension to the band. Did a little bit, but it was kind of funny. I think Tom's playing was, you know, this was something I guess, you know, I was just figuring out at that time. But, you know, the people you play with have such a huge influence on how you play. The guys in the CA Quintet, I think that was their whole mindset and the way who they were as people and how they approached everything was totally different than the system. So I think Tom was completely comfortable in the CA Quintet. I think when he got in the system, he liked it, but as the more he was in the band, he felt a little bit more like, well, he was restricted in a way because we were a little bit more, you know, we were trying to be more spontaneous, but we're not definitely not as spontaneous as he was used to being, you know. So it was a little different situation. So that worked for a while, and then finally that ended up being the reason why Tom finally ended up leaving after a while.
How long did that lineup last?
Tom stayed in the band, I believe, till about I'm going to say point 1970. Before Tom left, actually, Phil Berdahl left the band. Replaced Phil with Gar Johnson, formerly of Chesterfield Gathering. Then Tom was in the band for like a month or so, and then that's when Tom left. And then Gar said, hey, why don't we add Jeff Boucher, who he had worked with in Chesterfield Gathering. And Jeff was a wonderful addition to the band. So that was a really, that was a very strong version of the System. And I'd say one of my favorites. Yeah.